Welcome into another edition of Locked On Bills. I'm your host today, Kevin Masseri, for an action-packed May show. OTAs begin today. Going to get into that a little bit. Going to get into a little bit more of the Richie Incognito move of letting him go off of the reserve retired list, as well as potential free agents becoming available, as Brandon Bean promised us here in early June, as we were told, as well as a couple of news on the rules and kickoffs and other things. Jason, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Excited to talk to you about some more Bills football on this fine Tuesday. How you doing?
Doing well. Really looking into really starting to get back to some more news as we've been in a lull since the draft. So let's jump right into this, Jason. I want to start with Richie Incognito and your initial reactions on the Bills removing him from the reserve retired list. Anything that you can think there? Why would the team do that? Like, what's your opinion on this?
I don't know, like, what exactly makes this different than, say, Bolden, who we held on to all year, and sort of it seemed like we had to grant him his wish to come off of the reserve retired list. So yeah, we did him a favor. Maybe we were appreciative of the work he's done for the team. I've never really seen a huge obvious rift between him and ownership or him and McDermott publicly, but obviously there was some sort of problem there that he wanted to get out and basically lie about wanting to retire or changing his mind or whatever it was. So I'm not sure. I'm glad that he's not going to be a distraction anymore. I'm glad that we kind of just get to move on and don't have to think about it anymore. I don't know that we needed to do him the favor. I'm not sure if I feel any better or worse if he goes and signs with the Jets tomorrow, if I'm really going to be scared about the Jets at that point or whichever team takes a chance on him. So I don't know. Let him go, out of sight, out of mind. I'll leave it at that as far as his character goes and everything else, because I don't know him personally, but I know from his actions that I don't know that I super wanted to deal with him anymore, and I'm not sure the Bills wanted to either.
Yeah, there's a little bit into that coming off of their high of the playoff game and then of the allegations that I guess he brought out with Yannick Ngakoue at the Pro Bowl anyway, so I don't know what happened with that. $6.3 million cap hit that got reduced to $5 million. Then he fired his agent. And then he wanted to retire. And now all of a sudden, he said he was having health issues. Now all of a sudden, he can play again, though. So that was short-lived. 34-year-old guard, I don't, coming off the Pro Bowl, but giving him a $5 or $6 million cap hit when you pretty much drafted his replacement and want to try out other pieces. I think it works out for both parties. And he had to pay back a roster bonus. So I still think he owes it back. Team collected that back and said, well, we appreciate your work here in the last couple of years. We'll grant you your go play again in the NFL. I'm sorry what your agent did, but you know, we're going to let you walk because we're not going to pay you any more than what you agreed to just sign. So we're going to let you loose. So I don't know that he'll get anywhere near the $3.6 million base salary he had. He has to return, you know, $1.1 million of his signing bonus. So I don't know. He just must have wanted a better situation for himself, maybe something closer to family. Who knows? So, you know, moving on from Richie Incognito, I mean, I think the Bills are in a really good spot there with guard. I mean, they have John Miller coming back. They're looking forward to seeing what he can do in this offense and this new versatile offense. Obviously, Vlad Dukas played a little bit better than everyone thought, as well as obviously there's still Ryan Groyd there and Wyatt Teller. Like, with him officially 100%, 1,000% out of the picture, who's your initial prediction to take left guard?
I thought it was going to be John Miller.
Okay.
From the start, I thought, you know, gun to my head, I'm thinking Miller, and I think, well, I mean, it could still be Miller and Dukas. I think it could be Miller and Teller. When we made that Teller pick, I said this guy's probably got a better chance to start than, you know, the three guys that we picked before him. Just based on our guard play and the fact that I thought that he was better than a fifth round pick. I thought he was a day two guy and better than one or two of the guys that even went in the second, third round in the offensive line category. So I'm very excited about him. And I just think that it's going to be a nice, legitimate competition. Even in a situation where we had Dukas in last year, people didn't even super think of about his competition because he had a couple of rough, you know, stops before Buffalo, but you know, he's got a bunch of starts under his belt for this team. So I think that provides real competition. You still have Ryan Groy, who could potentially play guard, even though we didn't really choose to do that last year. And then Adam Redmond, who we had from last season, who could compete there as well. So okay. I think healthy competition is good, and I think that's what we have this year, even if we don't have maybe a standout player at that position.
Yeah, there's some good depth, some good competition, some good young talent there. So we'll see what ends up happening. There's a lot of good options, and I think the team's in okay shape. They felt that way and ultimately have $18 million in cap space. $3.2 million is going to go to Josh Allen here very shortly. The team will be around 14 and change with some cap space. 4 and change, maybe even more, is what Bean wants to keep. They still have between $8 and $10 million this year that they can spend, Jason, if they feel like it, or roll over next year. And that's including, you know, near $60 million plus next year after it's all said and done, with a lot of potential old players that they're able to cut. So there's a ton of cap space, which kind of gets me into Brandon Bean's next thing, where he said, hey, when players become available at this time of year in late May, early June, you know, it's time for us to evaluate our team like they did last year with Trey Boston. They wanted him, but he ended up meeting someone at a gas station that told him to sign with the Chargers, as well as obviously the Decker, who has said that the Bills called him, and obviously Jeremy Maclin, who ended up choosing Baltimore. So with this name, I wanted to ask you about it. Michael Kendrick from Philadelphia. What are your initial opinions on a top 10 rated PFF linebacker that becomes available in a 4-3 defense that could be a pivotal player in a defense like McDermott's?
Yeah, it's going to depend on the number, but I think that he could definitely provide an improvement for this team. I don't know that it would be a slam dunk, like for sure thing. I think there were better linebackers at the start of free agency, but you know, for a late cut, I think he's a really good player. Again, you said he was ranked 9th in PFF last year, playing the Sam linebacker in Philly's defense. He had an up and down career there, sort of had a big year, and I think 2014 got a bunch of money, got a 4-year extension there through 2019, where he was going to make close to $7.25 million a year. But really had an up and down career, only played 27% of snaps in 2016, where Jim Schwartz sort of took him off the field in every possible situation in sub packages. Came back last year due to some injuries and played out of his mind for a Super Bowl winning team, was on the field for 60% of snaps. I think he has the potential to do even more. Still only played 6 years in the NFL. So it would just come down to price there. I don't think that you totally break the bank for him, but I do think you could pay a little bit of a, you're not paying vet minimum for him. You could pay a little bit of a premium for him. And I think that he would start immediately in our 4-3. Whether he would be playing in sub packages for us, I don't know. I think that Tremaine Edmonds is going to be a person that's going to be able to do that. And as Milano is a former safety, I think he definitely has the ability to do that. So we'll see. But I do think he'd be a defensive improvement for us who would play right away. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And what's interesting is I hate to bring him up, and we'll get into it because we're talking about sub package and linebacker, is Lorenzo Alexander, who's the 12th highest paid player on the Bills. I don't know if you're getting the top 12 best player on the team value right now, as much as that pains me to say and pains, I guess, you to listen to this. But he is going to have a cap hit of $3.6 million with a 2.45 base salary and a dead cap of 1.8. Obviously, you can June 1st cut him and save a fair amount of money this year on the cap and then have none next year of dead cap. So it's an interesting player here, Jason, that if you bring in a player like Kendricks, do you let Lorenzo go? Because obviously you still have Milano and Humber here. What's kind of your opinion on that? Like, is there a role to have all these guys on the team? I mean, it would be pretty deep.
Yeah, I'd like to see. I mean, first off, I'd like to see if they could play Lorenzo on the true edge more. I don't know if that would be a perfect spot for him, but I just think having him get after the quarterback is his best asset on the defense at this point, and playing him in space definitely isn't. I also think that you want to keep him on for special teams, and I know that 3.5 or whatever is high to be paying him right now, so maybe you want him to take a pay cut and stick on with this team so he doesn't get cut late in his career and is looking for a job. But I'd have a tough time finding room for all of those guys. You also have Humber, who maybe would play a little bit. But I do think you want to keep Lorenzo on this team. And I think the Bills do too. It is a team that clearly values veterans and clearly values special teams. I do think he's a guy they would try to keep on. But if you're talking about Kendricks and Lorenzo playing on the field at the same time, I'm going to say that probably is like super unlikely.
Yeah, you don't see that happening, obviously. But I think that this team really values the special teams ability. And I think that obviously he gets heightened to the 12th highest paid player on the team, but he's going to offer you that special teams ability and play whatever he's asked to do. Like you mentioned, going to be a more edge rusher, being able to play every single teams and every single rotation there. And what did kind of lock him in, even though there is some cap savings to be had and where he has leverage, is that the Bills actually gave him a roster bonus and 316 for $300,000. So nothing crazy. But an additional $1 million of his 2018 salary was guaranteed on that 316 date as well. So the Bills would pay him $1.75 million anyway. So the real thing to say, Jason, is are you going to get $1.85 million out of Lorenzo? And I think you do. And I say that you're going to get that value because you're going to pay him $1.75 anyways. So at that $1.85 number, I think you're going to get that out of him in 2018. So I don't think even the Bills have much leverage to say, hey, you want to take a pay cut? He's going to be like, well, technically, you've already given me a bunch of money. You're only going to pay me $2.4 million base salary. And I carry this dead cap anyway. So like, what are we trying to do here? So I think you see him stick on for those reasons.
Yeah, probably. And if he does stick on and we add more linebackers and we do want to maybe move him around, maybe back, you know, on the line of scrimmage for most plays, you know, that defensive end position is still, you know, I think we could still get money back from Hughes, even though they already said they weren't cutting him. You know, teams lie or they change their mind all the time. You know, Shaq Lawson has still been up and down, struggled, injuries. I still like his potential, but he's not a guarantee. And all of that, you know, the onus sort of gets put on those guys getting better when you sign a guy like Trent Murphy to pretty big money. Uh-huh. I see it. You know, you're not going to cut a guy like that you just paid all that money to, but I do think that he might make a player expendable. And if you move Lorenzo around to maybe a situational pass rusher role, you may see things in flux over there too.
Yeah. It's an interesting note that I'd like to be seeing once we're talking about linebacker. You could let, obviously if you signed Kendricks, a player that would immediately take a role, and then now you're playing Lorenzo, Humber, and away, especially with Tremaine Edmonds, you're playing them in, you know, special teams standouts there. So you might not need a guy like, you know, you just went out and signed an inside linebacker, you know, believe it or not, and Julian Stanford, and you can save, he's making $1.45 million, you can save $1 million by now trimming him off the roster. So I think that's a better way to go than Lorenzo would save 1.8. I think it's better to get that $1 million back and put it towards someone like Kendricks, because now your linebacking core is that much better and you don't need Stanford for a special teams ability, because now two of your potential starters in March are now back to special teams, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, they have a bunch of special teams guys that, you know, they signed a few of them the offseason to, like, actual, you know, NFL money that they could be moving around at this point. They can't possibly keep all of them. So I'm sure they want to keep as many as they can, as they want to. But, yeah, a guy like Stanford immediately becomes another player with one less linebacker spot and, you know, special teams.
And that's not to mention Raphael Bush, who's making $1.75 million. Obviously, he's your safety three, but
same thing there. And he's a little less expendable just because of the safety position. Maybe
they want a little depth as deep there,
as a linebacker. But yeah, all the special teamers, they could make the difference between keeping a sixth receiver or a fourth running back, or you never know, second fullback.
Would you? Yeah, right. To wrap it up, though, would you, if you could say right now that the Bills could sign Kendricks and he could add to this already deep defense, further making it, you could sign off on that. Would you risk not having a number two for the year? Would you say, I'll sign it because I think Kendricks would help fortify a top 10 defense? Or would you say, no, I'd rather still find that receiver?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, if the receiver market stays exactly the same, then I'll take Kendricks. But I do think that the receiver market may move a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just based on all these teams that are, you know, getting close to the cap, even Philadelphia at this point. I don't know who they have exactly available, but who would be cuttable, but I know that that's a team that's really close, that has a bunch of receivers on their team. Obviously, we've probably talked about Denver on this podcast.
Everyone's favorite.
They draft a second or third round receiver every single year, and even though not all of them have panned out, they're still paying a bunch of money to Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. I can't imagine both of those guys lasting through.
Who's your favorite, real quickly, out of the two?
I don't know. I think Sanders would maybe fit on our team better, but I don't know that you can't have like two big perimeter outside receivers that might even be a good, good sort of fit for Josh Allen.
Thomas is 12 against the cap and Sanders is 11.
Yes. I mean, when Thomas signed, I think he was a top five paid receiver and he probably deserved it for a year or two. I've always liked Thomas. Obviously his play is declining a little, but I don't think he's done. You know, I think that he can be a dynamic receiver and it's just a big receiver. And he was one of the guys I've had to eat the biggest crow on in terms of, I did not think he was going to be a good pro and thought that he was overdrafted in the first round. And, you know, big guys are sometimes a crapshoot. I kind of felt the same way about Jeffrey. I definitely felt the same way almost about Benjamin. So, but you also get some of those big guys who just don't work out.
They sometimes work out, but then the Bills get stuck with James Hardy, but that's a story for another day. Right. Interesting though, on this note real quickly, as we talk about money and finding free agents, and as June 1st rolls around, as we started, Kendrick's getting caught and, you know, he's the topic of discussion right now, but Sanders isn't cuttable. He has a $12 million dead cap and he's only making 11. So they're not going to cut him. No one's going to trade for $12 million. Trading him is beneficial to the Broncos, but not to a team. So that might be a situation where Sanders has to play this out at least for one. Then next year, he's very cuttable. So that's just a note for everyone listening that Sanders is not cuttable. If they do, they're taking money away. So I don't know what they're going to do with Emmanuel Sanders. If they post 6-1 trade him, they can save out $2 million. But then a team's going to take on his $8.2 million base. So that's a little bit more palatable, Jason, 8.2, but you're also, I don't know, I guess that's about the number. What would he get in free agents? So it's interesting. A team might trade a seventh or something for him. I don't know of your personal opinion on that. So that's,
I don't know, after the season that he had last season, and I know that quarterback play's starting to become a factor in it, but
you pay him 8.2?
No.
Okay. Then, no, then he's kind of in a stalemate.
Yeah. I would rather have Thomas at this point anyways, but yep.
So they're going to have to hold on to him. Next year, he's very cuttable, and the story changes. But as far as 2018 and June 1st this year, he is not a cuttable player, and or unless someone's willing to give up maybe even a low-level player, not even a seven, something, and pay him 8.2 or get him to restructure, which he's got no reason to do that.
Well,
he's going to make it cut him, personally.
I mean, Sanders, of the two of them, is the older, smaller, slower, less productive last year.
Just keep Jeremy Curley.
And more injured of the two. So, right. I mean, I think Thomas is a big-time player. But, you know, I guess he would solve a number two. I mean, he could. I don't – you know, he's not going to play the slot for you, but –
Demaryius Thomas is always healthy. That's something that this team likes. He gets 80 catches per year every year since 2012. He, even though last year wasn't great, I mean, 949 yards and 5 touchdowns, he's still producing at a high level, still playing a lot of games, does still possess speed, is a 6'3", 229, does have that talent. He is everything the Bills would look for in a player if they're ever thinking about that. But I think he probably still comes with fairly immense value. I don't think he's a cut candidate. Always a trade candidate, I guess. Once again, you take on $8.5 million to have him, a little bit more worth it. But you're also going to, what are you going to give up for him? Like, you're probably looking in that Benjamin range, I would think, a 2019 third or fourth.
Sure, probably. But we've shown that we weren't afraid to do that either. Even as we were stacking up for, you know, stacking up quarterback picks, we still wanted to make that trade for Benjamin. So,
right. So there is some money to be traded for there. I mean, he does come with a huge number next year, so trading still isn't super advantageous, so that might keep his pick value down. So,
yeah,
again, he's still a pretty decent player. Who knows what happens there? But Denver's a team to watch as anything materializes there. We'll get into it. But they did draft as Jason mentioned, another receiver in Cortland Sutton there. And they do like McKenzie, and there's a lot of players there that they, you know, and obviously they would keep one of the two, so they would get that player still. Say they kept Sanders, they still have Sanders, Sutton, McKenzie, on top of, you know, Deshaun Hamilton, who they, and Carlos Henderson. So they have some young, a lot of young receivers there who they eventually want to see a shot with and stop, you know, playing these $10 million 32-year-olds. So
yeah, and I'm saying that even if those guys don't get cut, you're looking at a talented player, whether it's, you know, McKenzie or Carlos Henderson or whoever, guys who were, you know, middle round picks last year who are going to be available. And I think when you have a team that stacks up that much, you know, somebody's got to not make the team, and you got to figure that Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton are both going to make their team next year.
Right.
You keep the other two, like you're talking about, you know, you almost have to push out a guy like Carlos Henderson, who they drafted in the third last year. Not saying that that's definitely the one they're going to pick, but I just think that there's going to be receivers available. So many getting drafted. I just think.
So with all that being said, one, you know, would you take Kendricks and then kind of wait, let it play out? Or are you saying, like, I think we still need to maximize receiver and see if one of these Thomas guys or guy of that level comes available?
I think that's what we're going to do.
I think they're waiting for the
latter. Yep. Yeah. I think they've made it very clear that they'd be interested in a wide receiver if one pops up, or really, you know, any talented player. I think Kendricks falls into that category, but I think they were thinking after the draft, all right, I think we're good at linebacker. We're not perfect at linebacker, but we have an NFL group at this point.
You do.
And I don't think that Brandon Bean probably thinks that about receiver right now, honestly.
And then another team I want everyone to look at is Minnesota. Obviously, they have their guns in Thielen and Stephon Diggs. And they just signed Kendall Wright to be their slot receiver, who I think you like. And I definitely like, too. He has some great years in Tennessee. Kind of rebirthed himself for 59 catches for 614 and a touchdown last year in a terrible Chicago offense.
It's just a guy that really gets open and isn't a big yards after catch guy or touchdowns guy or whatever, but like really fits your slot and sort of just a guy to go make third downs roll really well. So,
and I know that they've really liked the potential of Stacy Coley, who I watched in person in preseason last year, looked pretty good against the Bills. Does that make Laquan Treadwell available? What's your thought on that?
Well, that's a guy I definitely don't like, but it's a big receiver that I was correct on, even though he wasn't even that tall. I just thought that guy was a tight end. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, you know, put up or shut up this year for Laquan Treadwell, because there was space for him to go win playing time last year. Diggs sometimes is banged up, and they were going off of those two receivers. They were getting Adam Thielen ball 1,000 times a game.
Yep.
Treadwell really could have stepped up for a passing game.
A 2.7 cap hit, if that helps you a little bit more than hurts you. That's another team we've talked about this. I mean, for having really good receivers, they can't draft a receiver either.
Yeah. No, they're definitely.
They've struggled there. They've hit on a couple of late-round college free agents. In Diggs and Thielen. So.
Thielen, Diggs was like a fifth, I think. He was a fourth or a fifth.
Fifth, yeah.
And then Thielen, yeah. Talking college free agent.
Long time ago. That's 2013 on his college free agent year. So he bounced, you know, he kind of went up and down on the practice squad until he finally made it. You know, he did nothing in 14 and 15, kind of showed he might be able to stick. Kind of like a Brandon Riley. So you never really know, I guess, right? Then showed out in 16 and then was really good last year. So
sure, yeah.
Interesting group, but Treadwell's the name there to watch. He's not your favorite, but is a name to watch. I don't think
I still will take a shot on talent.
Yep.
You know, enough people saw it 2 years ago. I wasn't high on him. I thought there were four receivers better than him in the draft. And actually, I think the NFL ended up drafting like three ahead of him anyways. But
right. Okay. Well, that's our free agent segment of this show, Jason. It was a good one. And we'll get into receiver try to get it every once a week until something happens or materializes there. And then we'll talk about that player. I'm going to talk about it until August, Jason, until something moves or the unit looks good. So one or the other. Last topic. I know you have some opinions on this, and I kind of wanted your opinion on the NFL kickoff rules. Give them to us, Jason, and what is going on there?
Yeah, so it's going to be pretty interesting. I'm not sure how much you're going to be able to see on NTV, but I'll tell you what I think the results are going to be. So the rules that have been proposed, I think, have been put through and had a neat little graphic today, was no running start for the kickoff team on kickoffs. So they're on a standing start, I'm assuming, on the line of scrimmage of the kick before they can go. So I'm assuming that's to, you know, get rid of running head starts so they're not, you know, they don't have an extra 10 yards to go kill somebody. Sort of innocuous stuff, like there has to be two guys, I think, outside of the hashes on the kickoff team, mm-hmm. On each side, which I think is just an even distribution. They're trying to keep it so everything isn't muddled in the middle. And then the return team has to have 8 players. I think it has to be an exact formation of 8 players within 15 yards of their line of scrimmage, the receiving zone. So you're only allowed 3 people back there to return past 15 yards. You get the 2 guys, which would normally be like your wedge, and then the 1 returner. You're not allowed the wedge block, so those 2 guys basically can't double team anybody that comes through. So I think this is going to create bigger kick returns.
Yeah, that's what everyone's saying.
I think it's creating bigger kick returns. You're going to have a lot of players getting slowed down right in the beginning. And I think you're going to, you know, I don't know exactly if it's going to do that. It might have the opposite effect. It seems like every kickoff rule they've had has an opposite effect of what they intended. I do think that it probably lowers injuries a little bit without those head starts and with a little bit of the congestion happening further up the field, but it is going to create more one-on-one situations for kickoff, like for returners versus players. I think you could have a situation where you get a lot of only one guy got through and you're just going to sort of have him going heads up with the kick returner. I think it's going to make for an interesting situation. I think that's going to be better for injuries, which is their intention.
And nothing moved with the yard line, right?
No, nothing moved with the yard line. But I think that a lot of the blocking and the action is going to happen further up near the kickoff, which is, for one, I don't know if it's going to create bigger kickoff returns, but I guarantee it's going to create more kickoff returns.
More.
Just guys are going to see more space, which I don't know if creating more kickoff returns really solves their injury problem, but I do think it makes it slightly safer.
Yeah, that's what they're going for, safer. Teams just kicking it through the end zone then if they're starting to see like it get out to 35, 40 or whatever.
Yeah.
Why don't you just kick it through the end zone, especially if you have a kicker like Hauschka or et cetera?
See, I think these are the rules that should have happened the first time before we moved the ball.
Right.
I think this would have made, because I think that's kind of what you want, is somehow having a magic mixture of more returns, more exciting returns, and less injuries, which seemed almost impossible. Okay. But I actually think these are like pretty good rules. The problem I have with this, the one unsilver lining that I see, is we just don't need more penalties. And we're creating all these rules, and they've created all these rules on the defense with holding and getting guys open and creating more scoring, but it puts 15 penalties on each side of the ball each game. And if I see a wedge block penalty a couple times or like illegal formations a bunch of times because guys can't figure it out, I'm going to start pulling my hair out, because we just don't need more penalties to slow down this game. And I feel like sometimes that's the result. And I know that they make these rules to be like, well, they'll eventually learn the rules and then we'll magically have 50 points a game. But the game's not better even with more scoring if we're stopping to watch Hockey League call 30 penalties a game.
Yeah, I agree with that. But hopefully they, with the new rules and less ability for a penalty, maybe, I don't know. I'm hoping for less penalties. So I guess we'll have to see on that and see what happens. Give us your final. Do you like this or not? All being said, all things considered.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. We tried it, but I'm not positive that it's going to have the problem is that they just don't have maybe they do, but they don't. It's really hard to just test these things out rather than just assuming what the consequences are going to be. But if you test this out in real game, maybe it looks good. And then, as you said, maybe we just end up with even more touchbacks.
Okay. Could happen. If it starts to be go one way or the other, I think you're going to start to see more touchbacks. But man, what an action-packed show, Jason. I got into a lot of stuff here. Really busy day for once here in Locked On Bills. I do appreciate everyone from tuning in. Tune into our other shows this week. We'll have some special guests and some great stuff going on as OTAs develop more and more positional battles. But from day one of OTAs, I'm your host, Kevin Misery, and that's Jason Shannon.
Thanks, guys.